nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So today we're going to be talking about alloying effects, basically extending what we already know to multiple components. To motivate the topic, I decided to bring back a slide that we've seen before. What you see here, okay, is the equilibrium potential. Now we know where that's coming from, as a function of the material capacity for both anode and cathode materials. Okay, I wanted to focus specifically, for no reason, in specific, on the cathode materials. Notice that, for example, the lithium manganese M04 systems has a range of compositions, okay, Y going from 0 to 1 or from 1 to whatever number, okay, and the idea here is to basically improve its capacity, the amount of charge you can put in there, okay, similarly with the lithium cobalt metal system. Okay, and you can even see even more fancy ones where you have the lithium, nickel, cobalt, some metal oxide system where M is magnesium, aluminum. Okay, and in this case, as the system is being alloyed, okay, we go from having chemistries, and I'm just going to summarize a couple of them here. We have learned, without really diving too much into it, that the LiMn2O4, for example, we know it's a high power density system. And in contrast, the LiCOO2 is known to be a high energy density system. Okay, just from the plot. Okay, so I guess the wish, right, would be at least ideally to be able to have a little bit of both, right? Wouldn't it be great if I had high power density from the lithium manganese oxide and high energy density of lithium cobalt oxide, if I could have both? And the obvious thought here is, well, what if I just start mixing them, right? And well, in this case, this one is not such a straightforward system, but you can think of the LiMn02, which gives me a lower voltage, right? But I can think of combining these two, okay? So that somehow I can get something that may not necessarily be what I had in mind, but maybe a combination of both that will improve its performance. Okay, so here I mostly sketched, it's a sketch of a binary phase diagram, just like the one we had, okay, and in the simplest case, okay, keeping this in mind, you could have that for that phase diagram, well, on one side, you could have really the material, the host lattice, okay, and on this side, you could have the material that we're putting in, you know, to keep the motivation consistent. I'm gonna put here the lithium phase, okay, the lithium component. And in this axis, of course, I have the temperature axis, okay, and if trying to repeat the phase diagram up on the screen, okay, there's gonna be a point where my host lattice is going to melt, okay, so up here I have the liquid phase. Down here, I expect the lithium phase to probably have a lower melting point, so this is coming down here. And, well, if we follow the rules of thermodynamics, at some point there will be the liquidus line of both systems will meet. We will have also a solidus line. There will be an eutectic. I'm not going to detail really where all of that is coming from, but simply just to start the process, right? On this side, I know that there is a point where if I reach that boundary, I will start precipitating an additional phase. So I'm going to call this side the alpha phase. And if I cross this boundary, let's just say, for the sake of argument, let's say that this temperature is room temperature, okay? And if I reach this point, which I'm going to call in this case C alpha, okay? If I cross that point, I'm going to start precipitating beta, and I'm going to precipitate beta or a lithium-rich phase, in fact, a very highly rich phase of lithium at that composition. Okay? And, well, as we have shown, we know that for that operating temperature, the voltage with respect to some reference is going to be limited by when the beginning of one phase region starts and another one ends. Okay, so I'm going to call this one C alpha, this one over here C beta, still the same composition axis. Okay, while I'm in the one phase region, I have a non-constant behavior. Then I have my plateau, as we were discussing, and then of course it comes down to whatever my reference material potential is. Okay, so here I have beta, here I have alpha plus beta, so here I have alpha plus beta, and here I have beta. Okay, and we discussed this in the context of the lithium iron phosphate system, if you remember. Okay, except that for the iron phosphate system, on this side I have the PO4 phase, and on this side I have the LiPO4, basically the lithium depleted and the lithium rich phase. Okay, and well, you can think of it as a single component system. I'm sorry, a binary system or a pseudo binary system. Right? You can think about it either way. Okay, and as long as you keep that picture in mind, it should work out, right? But the trick really is, what if I want to move away from this description, right? Where the only thing that I'm varying is really the concentration of lithium. I'm trying to put something in addition to, okay? So instead of thinking at it in this two-dimensional plot, I'm really considering a temperature composition. We're going to call this now C2, C3 map. Okay, now we have to think of a three-dimensional contribution, because now, and in this plane, I'm going to try to draw this here very quick. Okay, within the TC2 plane, I still have my eutectic phase diagram, but the moment I start doping it with C3, putting something in, there should be an effect on what this alpha plus beta two-phase region develops. I mean, ideally, of course, I would want to widen my concentration range, right? That'll probably give me a wider plateau, okay? Or maybe I want to keep the plateau the same, but improve its conductivity, right? That's another thing that could happen, okay? And we end up really with a much more complicated object, because now this domain of equilibrium, now we cannot think of it in terms of a two-dimensional map anymore, but now this has to be a three-dimensional object that we have to handle. Well, and for, I guess just for starters, one of the complications we have is that it's really hard to draw on the board, right? So instead, what we do is we look at two-dimensional cross-sections, and I think it's very convenient that when we draw this map, this occurs at T room temperature, right? The equilibrium or the operation temperature. So instead of looking at the three-dimensional temperature composition behavior, we focus on looking just at a fixed temperature cross-section. Okay, this is referred to an isotherm. Okay, and we would like to understand what happens here, Because if we understand the composition behavior within the plane, okay, as we increase or decrease the temperature, we will start looking at different planes within this three-dimensional object. Okay? Okay, so that's the trick. Oh, and there's one more thing. Okay, so before, if you remember, okay, we saw this maybe three lectures back, we found that C1 plus C2 equals 1, and then we arbitrarily said that C2 was going to be referred to as C. Okay, now we have this C2 axis, right? On this corner we have C1, on this corner we have C2, and somewhere here we have C3. But now we replace that relationship. I'm going to put it here. C1 plus C2 equals 1. We'll replace that in its entirety with C1 plus C2 plus C3 equals 1. Okay? So, if you think about it, you have really one plane, okay, here where you cannot go beyond that line, okay? And that corresponds, if the C3 is 1 in this corner and C2 is 1 over here, then really we're talking about that we cannot, all the action is occurring within this volume that has this triangular, square, rectangular volume, okay? Really, that's where all the action is. Okay, but again, it can get very complicated. And the trick really, and of course I'm not intending here to give you a full-blown lecture on thermodynamics of ternary systems, but its application to electrochemical systems. Instead, so when you see this type of behavior, what you do is, well, I would really like to look at what happens inside the plane, and I'm going to draw it over that. And turns out that this construct has been described. I mean, I'm going to draw it here. I'm going to assume from this point on that everything occurs at a constant temperature, T equals T naught. So I have here C2, and here I have C3. Okay, and this goes from 0 to 1, and that goes from also from 0 to 1. Okay, and if I look at a plane, I'm trying to look what's occurring in this map. Okay, we usually don't look at it that way. Instead, what we do, and this is referred to as the Gibbs triangle, I'm trying here really hard to draw an equilateral triangle, where on this side I have M, on that corner I have Li, okay? And since I want to alloy this binary system, I put X in that corner, okay? And, well, the idea, I'm going to animate it up here, is that if I do this right, okay, I should be able to, in this map, be able to represent the isothermal equilibrium of the system, okay? And as I make incursions in the system, and down here, I'm going to try to draw it upside down. Okay, down here, in this side of the map, I have my binary, okay? And as I alloy it with stuff, okay, if I put more X in it, the miscibility gap in the MLI region, what happens to it, I may gain it or I may lose it. So for the sake of argument, I'm going to assume that the solubility is compromised. So this two-phase region of alpha plus beta in this plane, the plane at that temperature, okay, will be seen as an area in this map, although in three-dimensional space, we should be thinking of this as a volume in this temperature composition map, okay? The trick is to read this map, okay? I'm just going to do this very elementary, okay? Well, at least I will try. So any line that is parallel to the MLI axis corresponds to values of constant X, okay? So I'm going to try to draw, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I tried, again, this is just a sketch, my attempt to draw them equidistant. Okay, so when I am in this corner, you can think of it as I'm 100% x. Okay? And when I'm in this, on this, along this line, the bottom line, okay, this bottom face of the triangle, I basically have the MLI axis. Any constant, any composition along this side, x is 0%. Okay, and each of these lines corresponds to an increase in concentration of x, right? Any line that is parallel to that. Okay, and I can say the same thing in any direction. Let's say in the this corner over here should be 100% LI. Okay, so I can try to draw lines that are parallel to the MX axis, and I guess it's complicated to do it on a board. We're still trying. And the beauty of having a slide is that you can fix all the errors there at the end. Okay, so any concentration along this direction, okay, tells me how much lithium I have. So again, this corner I have 100% lithium. This line, as I attempted to draw it, should be 20% lithium. And all I'm doing here is changing the amounts of M and X. Okay? And finally, well, I can try doing the same in the other direction. Let's see if I can do it right. Oh, man. I'm going to skip my cartoon to do it here. It was supposed to look like that. Okay? The idea, again, is that each of these lines corresponds to different concentrations of, each line corresponds to a fixed concentration of the amount opposite to the corner of that line. Okay? The corner opposite to the phase, to that phase, gives you the amount of that value that you should have, and here you span from 0 to 1 of the other component. Okay? And when you're sitting in one corner, let's just say that corner over here, okay, you can take this corner in this equilateral triangle, okay, as the amounts of each contribution given the intersection of the lines. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so let's just try to do the example, right? So in this case, I am 20% of M. Okay, I should be 40% of X. And, well, since this whole thing has to add up to 100, then 40% of LI. Okay? Do you see that? Okay. So, this is just to be able to describe the composition in this space. Okay? And when you consider the intersection of the two-phase region, you really care about where those intersections occur, because for that fixed composition of the third component, it'll give you how the measure of where the solubility limits changed. Okay? So for example, if I draw my map for x equals 0, and I'm going to draw it in this corner, my voltage versus composition map, in this case Li is here, and I have my delta phi. Okay, for this made up example. Okay, if I am going along that axis, so my solubility limits will be, like we said before, we have C alpha and C beta. Okay, and again it will drop. It'll have a plateau. Okay, and then it'll fall again. Okay, but if I add X to it, notice what happens to the solubility regions. Basically they close in. Okay, and because I start in a one-phase region, let's just assume that we are at the start of the same voltage I just lost potential, right, from doing that. I still have my plateau, and then it drops again. Okay? Do you see that? So, the addition of a third component in the system, what it does, it'll alter the shape of the material. It may decrease the amount of charge that we can use, okay, but not always, okay? For this made-up example, of course it will, because, you know, I build it that way, okay? But you may gain on something else depending what other phases appear, okay? Any questions to this point? Yes?
Can we connect that the second line upwards? Can we draw the second line upwards?
This line?
Above the original line. Yeah, by connecting it with a flatter slope.
With a lattice slope?
With a flatter slope. From the top, you can connect the...
Yeah. Like this?
No. On the right hand side. The point on the right hand side.
The point on this point?
No.
Okay, can you do it just...
The second line that you drew...
This one is the second line that I drew.
Yeah. So that is below the original line.
Right.
So can we draw the second line above the original line? Because it
can... Yeah, it'll depend, yes. So the question is, I made the example so that the voltage were lower, right? And the question is whether or not this curve should really be lower or higher with respect to the Alloyts system. In principle, it could. It really depends on the chemical potential, or if you prefer, the free energy of the transformation. Okay, in this case, I built it like that. But I guess it depends how entropic the system is, right? If the enthalpy of mixing increases when I add the additional component, okay, then instead of wanting to mix, basically more entropic, I make it more enthalpic. It could be that it actually opens up, right? That I start here, and then it just, if it has that circular shape, it could actually open up, right? And the enthalpy is one of the is what raises the potential, right? The entropy is what tries to make it mix and makes it more slopey, okay, and lower, okay? So, those are the components to think about in general, yeah? But let me elaborate a little bit more so you can see what the potential benefits or pros and cons from taking this approach are, okay? So in general, before I do that, any other questions? Yes? Is there any benefit from adding a fourth component? Yes. In general, in material science or in engineering in general, going anything beyond two or three components, I mean, and people do that, right? They just go and say, my intuition tells me or my calculation tells me that this is going to happen, and they do it. And real systems are not binary or ternary. They're really multi-component systems. It's very hard really to track down the basic science of that because it's so messy, right? In some cases, traces of something that you may not necessarily expect could increase your performance. And at that point, we are going beyond the basic science that we're trying to take one step at a time to basically say, I don't care what it does, just do it, right? And you just throw at it, right? But there are people that have been analyzing quaternary and five component systems. But again, it's very complicated for the interactions that you are, in this case, not really keeping track of. Okay. I want to make an additional comment to that. I'm going to erase this bit. So there could be an advantage in the sense that by adding more components, additional phases may appear. Okay. At the end of the day, we're limited by something called the phase rule, okay, which really tells you the number of phases that can coexist at equilibrium, right? In this case, C tells you the number of components, okay, and F basically the dimension in thermodynamic space. Okay, basically how many degrees of freedom, how many variables, what are the range of the different variables that allows for that phase to exist. And P corresponds to the number of phases. So I'm going to just solve for P for 1 second, right? Which is not the most complicated math we could necessarily do. Okay? But you can see how by increasing the number of components from binary to ternary, keeping the space of where those phases can exist, I can increase the number of phases that exist at equilibrium. So for binary systems, okay, you can have 3 phases at equilibrium, and actually, they exist at that one point, right? It's a zero-dimensional space, okay? While 2-phase equilibrium exists in these two-dimensional areas, right? And of course, you also have a single component equilibrium in these other areas, okay? The moment you add an additional component, you go from 2 to 3, the number of phases that can coexist will completely change, okay? So in principle, you can generate wider regions where the electrochemical potential remains flat. So in theory, you can. But notice that by doing that, basically, you might be also adding additional phases that you may not want. So basically, it's, I guess, the moral to the story is be careful what you wish for, because it can come true, right? You can get so many other things that you do not want, some reactions that are undesirable just from adding more stuff to it. And, well, it gets much harder to handle, okay? Any other questions? Okay, so anyway, the point that where we're going from here is, well, down here we have a binary phase diagram along that phase. Okay? So it turns out that you could have along on every single phase, you could have your own separate binary. Okay? And think of it as, well, just to say something, right? I could think of this corner to be the manganese oxide system. That corner could be the cobalt oxide system, and that side could be the lithium corner. Okay? So the lithium cobalt oxide corner, we might know what it's doing. The lithium cobalt oxide corner, we also may know what it's doing. And we may also know what the manganese oxide cobalt oxide corner is doing. Okay? But when we put them all together, we start seeing effects that develop here, okay? And that's the whole point of this slide, right? Again, you can see here that triangle, and I'm going to try to move that triangle up to that corner. So as a result of that, okay, now we were going to have, of course, we still have our two-phase region, but to make up the example, let's just pretend that now I have these two-phase system that are, when I dope it with the additional component, will start appearing. Okay? And, well, we still want to say, if we make any of these chemistries, we probably want to make them somewhere along the MX edge, right? Maybe I want to start, if I start on the X equals 0, I basically had the chemistry already had. And as I dope it, I may actually lose some solubility just from that corner, but at some point I will run into this other plateau. Okay? So in this case, my lithiation sequence is really performed as I go from one, say for example, from this corner along that line to this other corner. Or if you prefer, all the way over there. Okay? So how will the voltage will look like would really depend as you engineer your material to specify what will be the discharge sequence, what phases you hit as you go through the system, okay? So, for example, that is one line, and I want to compare it against this other line, and finally, this other third line, okay? I'm going to just sketch them over there just to give you the qualitative idea. I'm going to keep my phase rule. Okay, let's do it first for the lowest most line. Okay, and I mean this that one is not really the hardest one to draw, simply because it only intersects two-phase region. It's really at the solubility limit of the MX edge. Okay, so and this is in this case, let's just call this one the LI concentration. Okay, and I'm going to try to draw them all on the same plot if I can. Okay, so I start, and since I start at a solubility limit, I will drop in concentration, then I hit the two-phase region. Okay, so nothing new there. And, well, in this case, I drew it in such a way that I end up right there. Okay, so after that, of course, it's just gonna drop. Okay? That's the first scenario. Now let's say I do it on the middle line, along the middle line. Okay? In this case, I start already at a two-phase region. Okay, that's great. Okay? And I'm going to pretend that for the arguments of, I'm going to assume that for the purposes of this argument, right, they all have the same, they start all at the same potential, which may not necessarily be true. Okay? And since I start at a two-phase region, and for roughly a quarter of that line, I have to have a two-phase region there, right? Then, of course, I hit a one-phase region until I hit the other two-phase region. Okay, and then I stop again. So did you see what I gained and what I lost? What I gained was that the region where my voltage dropped initially, now it became spinned until the red two-phase region, until we leave the red two-phase region. Okay? Then we have a band of solubility, right? Of good solubilities, right? So then I don't have a two-phase region anymore, so I this thing starts varying again. Okay, then I hit the other two-phase region. Okay, and then the discharge ends. Okay? Now let's do it for the last one. And the last one, I also start in the two-phase region, but at the high end. Okay? So I'm gonna draw it again here, but actually it's shorter. Okay, so I'm gonna draw this one only halfway through. Okay, then I enter again a one-phase region. But this one is not so wide as the previous one, so I don't drop so much. Okay? Then I have a very wide two-phase region, and then it ends. Okay? So do you see what I'm really aiming here is for you guys to see the possibilities. Okay? If you understand the isothermal multi-phase behavior, you can basically engineer in principle what should be your discharge sequence simply by making the composition that you want. Okay? And I think that's very powerful if you think about it. Okay? And going back to, let me see if I have anything here. No, there's nothing there. Before I show you that one, let's just go back to this one. Then I hope you can see this slide now with different eyes, okay? When you're trying to engineer what the voltage is, here that area in this map really refers to what is the voltage that I can deliver, okay? And specifying what would be the composition ranges that I can withstand. Assuming, of course, that the diffusivities allow me to actually make that a practical design, okay. But you can think of it as it is the phase diagram. It is the means to tailor the voltage versus capacity curve. Okay. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Okay. So now I'm going to take this to the next level. So we have, I showed you that map of the three eutectic diagrams that are meeting at the faces of the Gibbs triangle. That's, think of it as a cut in this three-dimensional phase diagram. In this case, if you look at this face over here, that corresponds to one binary. That other face corresponds to the other binary, and well, I'm not even going to try to draw the other one or point it out, but you can imagine that there's another eutectic there. Okay. Notice that the solubility limit or the melting point of A, B, and C's are different, and how when I add the other two components, there's a depression of that melting point so that the melting point of the ternary alloy can be suppressed to somewhere in the middle, right? That is, could be well below what A, B, and C by themselves can give you. Okay? So, there is some benefit, as we just tried to show, from alloying, but there could be some drawbacks, like we could lose in its entirety or mechanical integrity because of the heat, right? If you wanted, if each of these binaries individually can withstand a certain maximal temperature by alloying, you could, in principle, drop that melting temperature, and that could be, well, not necessarily, but it could mean some loss of performance. Yes.
Does the melting temperature always drop?
For this system, yes.
Okay. For
yes. In general, if you have additional phases within the triangle, they could actually raise it, right? Depends on how, if there's you could have a retrograde phase transformations, right? You could have other phase transformations that actually are more favorable, but only appear in the ternary system, in which case, instead of seeing the valley of these, well, they almost look like domes of churches that are, you know, coming together in one corner, right? You can think of that there could be some materials where an additional tower appears in the middle, okay, but only occurring as a result of adding that additional component. It is obviously very chemistry dependent, and you either perform the set of thermodynamic experiments to figure it out, okay, or if you're really good at density functional theory, you can try to go in that direction, okay? So it's all a matter of, you know, how much are you willing to invest to find a potential new chemistry, okay? And in the case of quaternary systems, right, you can think of trying to understand the ABC behavior, keeping D constant, right? So for every D, you could have a pseudo ternary, right? Because, I mean, in general, I mean, we have, look at the lithium cobalt oxide, I already have three there, right? If I look at the lithium manganese oxide, I already have three there, right? So if I have, look at the lithium cobalt manganese oxide, I already have four, right? So something has to remain fixed, right? If I really want to apply any of these ideas, any of this science to understand the combined system, right? Something has to remain fixed as we do it, okay? So, okay, that's on that end. Okay, so here I'm just trying to give you an idea of the effect of temperature for the isotherms, right, the constant temperature cross-sections. Okay, this triangle over here, you know, A, B, C, which corresponds to A, B, and C, okay, it's occurring at a temperature much higher than the highest melting temperature. Okay, so internally, it's just a flat triangle. Basically, it's all liquid inside, okay? But if I bring it down, say I intersect it here, okay, I basically cut it so that I am intersecting one of the two-phase regions. I have now C plus L, right, as the two-phase region, right? And there are some materials that you may care about that. If you have a liquid type of battery, right, as I approach one corner, I may start actually be precipitating these particles that could be rich in the species that you're using to show your charge, okay, or if you move well beyond the two-phase region, you can always keep it completely liquid if that's what you're aiming for, right? There are always advantages for having fully liquid systems, which is that diffusivities are always going to be much higher than the ones in the solid phase. So that's a game that you can play as well, okay? If I lower it even more, in this case, I am intersecting this branch and this one. I'm intersecting A and C. So I have now a two-phase region, A and L, A and liquid. There's a single phase A over here. I have the C plus L over here, as I had before, plus the pure phase C. And somewhere in between, I have the liquid phase. Right, so notice what happens now, right? I go from a one-phase region to a two-phase region to another one-phase region, which should say something about the electrochemistry of the system. Okay, if I cool it down even further, then of course I will start to have my beta plus liquid phase, right, in the B side. Okay, but notice that because A and C had the highest melting points, now you can actually have solid along the AC side. Okay, which would be basically along the phase that we can't see in this diagram. Okay, and if we cool it even further, okay, now we have two-phase regions along the AC phase, the AB phase, and the BC phase, and somewhere in the middle, right, if we decide to actually cross the middle of this triangle, we could have a little bit of liquid that forms. Okay, that may or may not be beneficial depending on what kind of system you have. Okay, finally, of course, if I cool it down enough, okay, I will have on the corners of the triangle the pure phases, and in between I have AC, AB, and B plus C phases, and, I could have a little corner in the middle where I have AB and C, all three of them coexisting, okay? And of course, in each operating temperature, you will get different plateaus as you go along, okay? Okay, again, just to show you that, in general, this could be very complicated. And typically, people, what they have, they usually don't have the whole composition temperature behavior. Sometimes they just have fragmentary data across cross-sections, especially on the window where you want to perform your design. And from there, they try to infer things. Okay? Okay. Let's see, is there time? Yes, I still have 5 minutes. Okay, so here's an additional system that I want to show, where to make the point that you not necessarily always can have a beneficial response. Okay, in this case, what I did in this specific example, again, another hypothetical example, on this corner, on the M side of the diagram, you have X naught M, okay, as the solubility limit of that system, and Li naught M on this other corner, okay? I have arbitrarily created a line compound, basically the LiYM phase. Basically, if I were to lithiate my system, I would like to lithiate it all the way to that line, because notice that just from doing that, in the absence of any other phase, to the left of that line, I already have a two-phase region. And to the right of that, I also already have a two-phase region. So that seems very useful, right? Because I basically have, except for this initial corner over here, everything is basically a flat isopotential. Okay, that should be neat, right? That's something I can use. But to make it even more interesting, okay, I added that additional phase, okay? The XZM phase, which is basically a mixture as a Z addition of X along this region. And this just happens to be Z equals 50%. Okay, so we're 50-50 on both of them. Okay, and I propose to guess or to infer, if I were to discharge my battery from this composition, XA, X sub A, M, all the way to LIY, okay? Okay, and I'm gonna draw it. Let's see, where have I not? I'm just gonna erase this bit. In this case, my map will not end on the li corner, but will end on the liym corner, and I will start on this end on the xim. And actually, probably one of the first things I should say is that this corner over here, which is where my reaction will stop, is not exactly liym. Okay, it's actually the fraction of liym that I had plus the addition of x, a fraction of x, right? Because we moved along that direction. Okay? Okay? So, really, there is some x, no, that I have just added to the system. Okay? Anyone care to guess? Since xzm is one phase, okay, and I start at that initial composition, and I go along that line, what would be the this area, what kind of phases do I have? How many phases do I have? Two phases. What are those phases? I have xm and let's refer to it by color. Yes, you're right. It would be the mixture of a fraction of a mixture of the green phase and the red phase, right? So in that entire region, we have indeed a two-phase region. So it'll be pretty much flat across the board. Okay? Until when? Until I hit the green line, which actually the green line is very close to the blue line. Okay? So if at all, okay, if we perceive any effect, okay, as we get there, there would be a small change, okay, from switching from having pure green to having a mixture of green and blue and then dropping. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, and well, that's what I attempted to draw there. Okay? Here, this one over here should be very similar. Okay? I'm assuming I start from the same voltage. So the only difference now is that actually my other phase, the green and blue phase equilibrium, is wider. So I drop sooner and then I get my other behavior. Okay? And then for the last plot, that one over there, what should I get? How many plateaus should I expect in this one? One plateau, why? Exactly, it only goes through one, it only has equilibrium between the green phase and the blue phase, right? So, but this isopotential should be the same isopotential as this one and that little one over there, right? So for this last one, could be doing something like that. Which one's better? Right, so you're saying the one who has the longest voltage plateau, constant voltage plateau. So,
from reading the state of charge, it's better maybe. Yeah.
Right, that's right. So better if you care about constant potential. You get less energy density though, right? You lose all this. right? So, but you gain voltage stability. Okay? This one might be better, and I'm putting here the question mark. If you don't care about this, what you care is deliver a higher voltage for longer amount of time. Okay? Which one would you care ultimately about if the lower potential phase gives you higher power? You might compromise some of that by sacrificing some of the energy. If this bit has more power, well, maybe I just want to tune this back. Okay? But if I want, maybe there's some application where I have one part of the battery should give me power and for some time should give me some energy, then you move this around. Okay? So really it all depends on where we want to go with this. Okay? So really, and I emphasize the better depending again, because it's really what is better, as we have been saying, it's application dependent. Okay? Okay. Any last questions for today? Okay. Well, thank you guys. See you on Wednesday.